Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The LQ Wiki continues to grow, and we are still progressing towards our goal of 3,000 articles. If you'd like to contribute to the largest general Linux knowledge base on the web, visit wiki.linuxquestions.org, and you can jump right in. Contributing couldn't be easier. You do need a separate username and password from the linuxquestions.org site, but aside from that, and pretty much no information is required there, sign up is instant and, of course, free. Once you have a username and password, you are free to edit any page aside from a very few protected ones, or even create a new page and add pretty much whatever content you would like. If you're not sure what you wanted to write about, if you click on the left-hand side, there's a link that says Wanted Pages, and that contains a list of articles that other members would like to see written, ranked by the number of people that would number of pages that link to them, which is a gauge of how many people wanted them written. The current count of articles is just shy of 2,600, so we are getting close to that goal of 3,000, so we could use your help. Next update. LQ ISO has now facilitated over 1.3 million downloads. So the next time you need to download a Linux distribution, head over to iso.linuxquestions.org to find a fast local mirror. Don't forget to pass the LQ ISO URL on to anyone you think may be interested in downloading Linux. Don't forget that if you see a distro or distro version, or even a mirror that you'd like to see listed that isn't, just click the suggest link and we'll get added ASAP. I would like to thank the LQ member, Massend, who has been helping considerably with the LQ ISO queue, which the addition queue, which takes care of the suggestions. He's been helping out quite a bit, and you'll notice over the last couple months now, the number of both mirrors and distribution versions has jumped quite a bit, and the speed at which the queue has been cleared has also jumped quite a bit, so thanks for that. Also recently updated on the site, when you download a ISO, the MD5 sum appears on the site. A lot of distributions, I think Fedora was one of the first ones, but some others have followed suit, are now going with a SHA sum instead. What we've done is update the site to automatically detect whether it was a SHA sum or an MD5 sum and show the correct one on the front end of the site. Thanks goes to David Ross for adding that code to the site. Now on to the news. First story is Google paying for Firefox installs. That's right, Google is indeed paying for Firefox downloads that come bundled with the Google toolbar. To think about it, it does seem like a win-win-win to me, which is of a kind of an uncommon situation there. You, as the referrer, get about a dollar depending on the country and some other variables it looks like. The downloadee, of course, gets one of the best browsers available and certainly a very secure and stable browser. And then Google not only gets a leg up on the competition, but also gets a good amount of direct cash via the number of searches done via the Google toolbar itself. I'm guessing this might have been a response to rumors that MSN will be much more tightly integrated into the next version of Windows, which is Vista. One thing to be aware of on this is that you should read the fine print, which I guess probably is always the case. Now, like I said, you could get up to a dollar, depending on the location of the user, and only if they have never ever installed Firefox before, which probably limits you there as far as who you're going to get that dollar for, which it seems a little bit steep. But if that wasn't bad enough, kind of hidden in the fact, and it's not in the same place the country and some of the other information is, it says, quote, "A Firefox referral is counted when a Windows user who has not previously installed Firefox downloads and runs the program for the first time." I have no idea why they're only paying for Windows users here, and that's only mentioned in that one spot. At any rate, this should help get some additional Firefox users, which is always a good thing, and that's fantastic to see, and I'm glad to see that Google, you know, is helping spread the word on that. It is disappointing to see that they are only paying for Windows users, though. The next story. Novell to standardize on GNOME. With the acquisition of Xemium, almost a couple years ago now, you kind of had to see this coming. Novell will move future versions of both SLES and NLD, which is the Novell Linux desktop, to GNOME, and KDE will continue to be supported in their OpenSUSE product, which is kind of their answer to Fedora. This, of course, is likely going to cause quite a bit of fallout, not only from KDE users, but from traditional SUSE users, as SUSE was one of the most popular KDE distros left. In fact, the SUSE staff had quite a bit to do with KDE development in the past via SUSE directly supporting some of the KDE developers. I think the distinction of most popular KDE-centric distro probably now goes to Mandriva, but of course, Kubuntu and Nopix are also going to be up there. It's quite interesting, I think, that KDE tends to be extremely popular in Europe, and I think one of the reasons for that is they have superior language, alternative non-American language tools, where GNOME tends to be much more US-centric, I think. The reality, however, I think, is that SLES and NLD users could probably care less, for the most part, the average user of that product. While we in the OSS world tend to love choice and tinkering with our desktops, enterprise users, and especially enterprise admins, tend to like uniformity, simplicity, and stability. They want to deploy something, know it's deployed, they want to minimize help desk calls, and having a single desktop probably does do that. In the OSS world, also, we tend to be vehement about some of our choices, and just a few examples would be, you know, VI versus Emacs, KDE versus GNOME is also a good one, where enterprise users usually don't even know what they're running, or if they do know, that they don't even know that there's a choice available, which is why, you know, many enterprises still run IE, and the majority of users don't care. Now, a lot of the IT staff, of course, either wishes they could run Firefox, or if they have permissions, have gone ahead and downloaded Firefox and are using it. But if you're talking about sales people, marketing people, which in many companies comprise the majority of users in that enterprise, they either don't care or don't even know. Now, with RHEL standardizing on GNOME a while back, Novell acquiring a GNOME company, and also having to cut costs, like I said earlier, you probably saw this coming. The sad part is, I think, that the further these large companies get into the enterprise market, the more of this, realistically, I think we're going to see. For this quote-unquote mainstream Linux adoption that everyone has been talking about to really happen, consistency is a must. You know, most OSX users, to take another example, they don't know if they're running a Cocoa app or a Carbon app. I would even say out of the enterprise, many users don't know that. On the OSS side, though, I think this is going to be a tough pill to swallow. Now, luckily, most projects will probably live on in a niche capacity for those of us that like choice, but some will probably fold when the lack of corporate funds start to kick in. I think KDE is going to be a notable exception here. They, of course, are going to do fine. They're a big enough project that they can sustain this kind of thing. But when the choices start coming down to one main app, some of the smaller projects, I think, that don't get chosen are probably going to suffer more than something the size of KDE will suffer. Now, for those of you who wanted corporate adoption, I hope you knew that this was the price that was eventually going to have to be paid. When you shift from doing things for just for the love or doing it to scratch your own itch to doing it for the money, the rules definitely change. It's not all bad, though. I think in the end, stability and end of use should vastly improve with moves like this. Porting things to Linux will begin to get easier as there are less platform choices and less different choices to make involved in that port, and mainstream adoption will likely become a reality. Now, will the price have been worth it when all that happens? That, I think, remains to be seen. Kind of on a related note here, yesterday the original founder of SUSE, Hubert Mantel, announced his resignation from Novell. It didn't say when it was effective, but it seemed like it was effective immediately, and his exact words were quote-unquote too late, so it doesn't sound like he's extremely happy with the direction that the company is going. In that email, he kind of took a parting shot, I think, at the Zemian folks, too. He has been the kernel maintainer for the SUSE distribution for over a decade now, and one of his comments was, "I'm sure someone from Zemian can do it. They have quite a bit of talent." So definitely some sarcasm there. And Novell team has lost more than a couple of the main SUSE people now, so it's clear that they're, in general, not happy with the direction that Novell has taken the distribution. Next story. Open source is not that open, and that was said by a Microsoft rep. The article was about a presentation that was made at the Open Source Business Conference. LQ was a show sponsor, and I had hoped to attend. The show was in Boston, but things just didn't work out, and I was not able to make it. Now, the director of Microsoft's Shared Source Initiative, Jason, claimed that open source is really not all that open. One of the things that he based that on was the fact that Red Hat issues patch updates for its, quote, premium offering, which is Red Hat Enterprise Linux, or RHEL, and keeps its customers' IT's infrastructure secure. And here's a quote, "But if a customer modifies this source code, Red Hat can't help you without charging you extra. They have to lock things down to provide value. As open source becomes more commercialized, it becomes less open," end quote. So that sounds reasonable, right? And of course, the answer is no. He's missing multiple points and is trying to create fun or is vastly misinformed. First, you can make all the changes you want and still get support from Red Hat as long as you can prove that you didn't cause the breakage that you're seeing. And that just makes sense. If you were to, say, change some Firefox code or some mPlayer code and then had a kernel problem, the kernel would be 100% supported by Red Hat. Now, if you change some kernel code and then have a kernel problem, obviously you're going to need to recreate that problem with Red Hat's stock kernel or diagnose the problem yourself. That's not less open. It's common sense. Now, in fact, this is the way that many very established industries already work. Take cars, for instance. You change the tires on your car and have an engine problem, Ford or Chevy or whatever car manufacturer you have will certainly help you with that engine problem. Now, if you start changing engine internals, changing your camshaft or anything like that, and then have an engine problem, you're quite certainly on your own. Beyond this, though, he misses one of the main benefits of open source, from a client perspective at least, and that is you avoid vendor lock-in. You don't like the kernel support that you're getting from Red Hat? What about if they discontinue a product that you like to use but would still like support for? You can go to Progeny, IBM, Novell, or any of the other myriad support services that will be more than happy to help you. In the case of the kernel, you could even hire a whiz-bang kernel guy and do it all in-house. The choice is completely and 100% yours. Now, if you have that same problem in a closed environment, your options are zero. Once Microsoft abandons a product, it is 100% unsupported. And much worse than that, it's 100% unsupportable. No one has the code, so there'll be no code upgrades, no bug fixes, no security patches, ever. Not from anywhere, not at any price. No choice. Now, one thing that I did find amusing in the article was the following comment. This is another quote. "We are building intellectual property into software and trying to sell it. We throw code over the wall for the community to build on," end quote. Throw code over the wall? It definitely seems like an odd choice of words to me. Really, it's almost condescending. And the fact that he said this in a room full of open source people at an open source conference means that that statement made it past the PR people, which is kind of scary. Do you really want a vendor that not only talks that way, but thinks that way? Well, choice is good, and there the choice is yours. Next story I have is, should the Linux kernel have a binary driver layer? Now, for those of you that follow the Linux kernel mailing list at all, you know this is often a hotly debated topic. Greg Cage recently posted about an OSDL meeting on this topic, and then he posted a later follow-up on those were both on his blog. Now, this is really an interesting topic to me. We all know why binary drivers are bad. And on my blog, I had linked to a post from a Microsoft employee giving some of the reasons why they were bad. And in this case, he was saying how people submit their drivers to the Microsoft Driver Certification Program, which is supposed to guarantee certain things about a driver as far as stability and compatibility goes. And they were finding at Microsoft that people were actually cheating in drivers by either disabling functionality or getting around benchmarks by looking for certain strings in a benchmark and doing certain things, which is, of course, something that you couldn't do in an open driver. Like most stories, though, there are multiple sides and multiple points of view here. There are certainly some cases where a company releasing a 100% open source and GPL driver is just impossible, be it due to third-party agreements, third-party licensing, whatever. I've even heard, and I've not been able to actually verify this, but that in some cases, an agreement that a company had would make it illegal for them to even release proper documentation on APIs and interfaces, which would allow kernel maintainers to write their own driver. Whether that's the case, like I said, I've not been able to verify that, but I have heard that. Now, in some other cases, a company may simply decide that they don't want to release a Linux driver, be it due to company culture, company policy, straight FUD, to prevent tampering, which would be some Wi-Fi networking arguments, although, of course, there are ways around that, obviously, or just a PHP's whim, whatever the reason may be. The reality here, though, is that the less driver support there is for Linux, the less message option we'll get. The average end user wants to buy something at Best Buy or Circuit City or wherever they buy it and plug it into their machine and have it work. No questions asked, no having to go to a forum like LQ to try to find how to install it. They want it to plug it in and they want it to work. And I don't think it's arguable that, you know, the less drivers you have, the less mass adoption that you'll get. But the reason I like Linux, or at least one of the reasons that I like Linux, is that it has gotten as far as it has because it values technical correctness, stability, performance, security over straight mass adoption. Now the question is, and I spoke about this in one of the last stories, is what price are we willing to pay for that mass adoption? It's a tough question, and the answer certainly depends on what side of the coin that you're on. I, for one, hope that we'll continue to value technical correctness, speed, stability, and security. And for now, in the short term, I think we will. In the long term, as more money gets into this and some of the rules here change, I'm not so sure which direction that will go. On a somewhat unrelated note, Greg made a comment in that blog post about the OSDL's technical management that was a bit troubling. I mean, OSDL has obviously become quite important to Linux with employing both Andrew and Linus amongst a variety of other peoples like Tridge, and I'd hate to see them drop the ball. So let's hope this was just an anomaly or a general one-time miscommunication, which do happen in even the best of companies. So it's not a trend that I've seen, so let's hope it was just a one-off. The last story I have is Gates and Ozzy challenge Microsoft to alter its business, aka the birthday memo. Another leaked memo from Microsoft here, and Dave Weiner had posted a full content of the emails. Most of the news outlets had just had snippets here and there. You can find the link to the full emails on my blog. And one of the quotes from one of the emails from Bill Gates was, "This coming service wave will be very disruptive. We have competitors who will seize on these approaches and challenge us," end quote. Now, these services have been coming for a long time now, and it's part of the ever-popular Web 2.0, 2.0 meme. So, once again, Microsoft finds itself waking up late to the party and realizing that they've been left behind. Once again, a day late, but never a dollar short. So, on the bright side for them, they aren't as late to this party as they've been to some other parties in the past. They've missed some other things by many, many years. In this case, it's only like a year, if not a little bit less. However, unlike those previous situations, they won't really be able to leverage their desktop monopoly in this particular case, at least not to the degree that they've been able to in the past. Now, one of the reasons for this, of course, is that companies like Google that are doing these service offerings transcend the OS. Doesn't matter if you're running Linux, OS X, FreeBSD, OpenBSD, Windows, whatever, as long as you have a browser, you can use them. Beyond that, though, Google especially has turned into a verb. It has tremendous amount of mindshare. While Microsoft can throw a huge amount of eyeballs at their offering, that doesn't always help. Let's take the auction space as an instance. Now, Amazon and Yahoo, which are of course huge companies that can throw huge amounts of eyeballs at their prospective auction offerings, neither of them have even put a dent in eBay. Like Google, eBay has mindshare in their space at least. And I would say Google has even more than eBay does. You don't see people talking about other companies like you do about Google and also eBay. You know, you see actors in movies saying, "Let me Google that," or buying something on eBay. And that's something you don't see with many other companies. And that's hard to combat. Now, of course, Microsoft has proven to always be a worthy adversary. But outside the desktop and related, like Office Suite areas, they definitely don't always win. The Xbox, while it's gaining ground, is still, I think, a clear loser to the PlayStation. MS-based MP3 players are getting crushed by the iPod. Windows-based cell phones are definitely not what Microsoft had hoped as far as market penetration there. So you get the idea. While they typically, historically, for the last decade or so, have always won in certain areas, they definitely have not in other areas, especially when they have not been able to leverage that desktop monopoly. So unlike, say, Netscape from the past, I think Google is in this one for the long haul and is positioned well to hold its own. Interesting that Scoble, who you have to think has had some measure of influence on this, whether it be directly or indirectly, his way of thinking is definitely refreshing inside the company and is something that's definitely wearing off in some directions. People are listening to him, and for good reason. He said he's still reeling from the memo, but I'm going to be definitely interested to read what he has to say once he stops reeling. This should be a battle, the likes of which we haven't seen in this space for a long time, and in the end, we, the consumer, should be the ones who benefit from this competition. Should definitely be a fun ride. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.